Two locks and a cox.
From Devon's Radio X with Exeter Chiefs.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
Welcome to Devon's Radio X and an episode of Two Locks and a Cox with myself, Chris Bentley and Sarah Cox. Ian's not here to tell us the number, but we'll get down to it. On the field, Chiefs lose at home and the Red Roses set up a Grand Slam decider after battering Ireland. Off the field, Johnny Gray leaves early and we're going to take a little segue across into the world of football and the round ball and Nottingham Forest Gate that Coxie would like to have a chat about. And then in the bin, Ian is on holiday, but also we want to talk about community rugby and payments. There's been a brilliant article in the Telegraph and we'll be talking about that. Let's get down to it. Two locks and a cox. Oh, it's one lock, one cox.
Two locks and a cox.
From Devon's Radio X.
Hello, Coxie.
Hello. That wasn't your strongest intro.
Did you not like that?
No, I didn't. I mean, you normally come up with some weird name for everyone, and I'm normally the dame of the realm. Yeah, oh. Well, you didn't say that, did you?
Yeah, I think Ian brings the banter. Ian is the hoot of the show.
It's the hoot of rugby.
He is. It's quite a serious one.
He takes that very seriously as well, doesn't he?
Well, to be honest with you, we should begin at the beginning, and we should say, you know, last week, We had no Brad the Rugby God who just disappeared on holiday.
That was chaos. We shouldn't have been allowed. That was the inmates running the asylum.
For those regular listeners that did tune in, apologies. We didn't have Brad steering the ship. But then this week, Ian's done the same thing, just disappeared.
Yeah, he's gone on holiday and he kept telling us last week that he was going. Has he gone to Egypt, hasn't he? Something
he has,
like that?
Yeah. Well, Statman actually messaged me last night and said, are we doing the stats, Chris? And I was like, has Ian not contacted you? I thought Ian was doing it. And then Ian tried to throw me under the bus. He's sending pictures from his resort in Egypt where they've had belly dancers.
Ian's decided that because he's on holiday, he doesn't do any work.
Correct.
Right, okay. So, yeah, we know where this is now, don't we?
So I was mildly upset at how
holiday.
The man conducted
actually,
himself.
Holiday? What is one of those? What is one of those?
Your life is a holiday, Sarah.
My life is a holiday.
Business class everywhere.
Right. Not everywhere, no. Anything over 8 hours.
Oh, right. Okay.
Not everywhere.
Oh, would you fly cattle class for like European games?
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that. I bet you pay an upgrade fee anyway. Or do you not just walk on and go, do you know who I am? Do you have your MBE pinned on your chest?
No, I should, shouldn't I? That would be a good idea. I'll walk on with my MBE.
True story. We went out to a friend's wedding in Australia when we were rugby players. And it was me, Nick Easter, who went on to play for England, and Richard Welding. We went to Tonga Liatoa's wedding. And at the airport, Easter was like, right, lads, I've got this plan. I'm going to wear a blazer and I'm going to lean over the desk and they're going to upgrade me. So he's in shorts and flip-flops and he had this blazer. And all through the holiday, he wore this blazer. Didn't get any benefits at all.
You shattered your ankle and didn't get an upgrade, did you?
No, I did. I flew first class with a broken ankle.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I had to lie flat.
Yeah. And then slipped over in his crutches.
Oh, mate, it wasn't funny. You weren't there, were you?
No,
Faye was absolutely wetting herself.
Yeah, but I
was
can
feeling
imagine
really
it as
sorry
well.
For myself. I just, like, tib-fib ended up having to be rebroken and reset because they'd done it wrong in Bermuda. And as I'm hobbling back to the bus, it was wet and my crutch went up. And then it was like I'm either gonna put my bad leg down or I'm going to have to wipe out like a WWE wrestler. So I just threw my leg in the air and landed on my back.
I think we've told this story before,
probably.
But it is still the same. It still tickles me.
While we're on tickling and ridiculing Chris, when I went on Tonga's wedding in Australia, I had a bet with Nick Easter who'd be first to play for England. And he got 51 caps and I got none. So I think he won that one.
I think you owe the man a Mars bar.
No, I owed him £100 and I actually saw him when Harlequins came down to play. Well, we played against each other for a few years and he wouldn't shake my hand when we beat Harlequins at the County Ground, which was a nice one. But then he went on and did loads of stuff. And I saw him when he was coaching Quins and I went, mate, I actually had £100 in my hand. He went, don't you worry, mate, it's all right. And that made it even worse. I was like, no,
yeah,
I want to give you this money.
He's taking the moral high ground. Take that.
But anyway,
take that.
Speaking of losing, Chiefs got well and truly beaten on... No, they didn't.
No,
they
I was going to say that's a bit harsh on them.
So I mentioned this with Statman a bit later on, and I talk of what I know. In 2004-05 season, we finished second in the Championship, and we could have, should have won the league. We beat Bristol at our place, and they absolutely battered us at their place. But we had a very small squad.
I went to that game.
And
with them, it was Bristol's old ground in that really random housing estate.
Yes.
And then it just appears out of nowhere, doesn't it? Yeah.
And it was live on Sky. And we'd beaten them at our place. Chris Bentley had scored an amazing try from 20 yards out. Unbelievable. Went through the middle of... Well, truth be told, Sione Kepu, the winger, went on a run and he basically ran around everyone for fun and then fell over 20 yards out. And in the disarray, as Bristol were getting organised, I just picked up and ran through the middle of a ruck. And I was dancing under the post and Rob Baxter said, put that ball down. I can show people videos of it. It's funny.
So there's no reason for you to be dancing. You're not a back to start with. Mate, secondly, you've got hands.
I reckon that try, I probably ran that in for more than the other 15 senior tries I scored in my 13-year career. So cumulative meters were like pick and go, pick and go, pick and go.
Did you have GPS in those days?
No, we didn't.
What did you do?
We had smaller fitting shirts to make it look like we'd paid for pro-spec shirts.
What?
But anyway, wow. I digress. The thing was, what happened was our last six games, we only had to win, I think it was three, to win the league. Even though Bristol absolutely pumped us up at Bristol, and we lost four of our last six because the wheels fell off because the team was just fatigued. And I was looking at the team on Saturday, and I've written about it in the paper as well. Bill Shankly said, you know, after a European fixture, you've got to win by five to get a draw in the league. You could just see the lads were fatigued. And some people were kicking off about some of the decisions made. But if you look at the grand scheme of it, Chiefs, they're only 1% off. But at the Premiership level...
1% is everything at the moment.
Yeah.
If you look how tight that league is as well.
Yeah.
And look at how tight the table is. Mm-hmm. And... I think this is the tightest it's ever been, and we had this discussion.
Newcastle aside, yeah.
Yeah, but even in...
Wow! Bristol kicked the ball three times in open play.
Three times!
Are you looking forward to officiating one of their games?
Can you imagine the mileage? you are just hanging on for dear life there, not to get 22'd.
I know.
The full Luke Pearce head wobble came out.
For those of you that don't understand, the 22 is if a team breaks from distance, the officials all have to get within the 22-metre line.
When you score the try.
When the try is scored, otherwise they're not being good officials. But
otherwise, you end up outside of even the wide angle on the cameras.
Yes, which nobody wants.
But back
to the plot, Chiefs. I just felt like it was a fatigued team. They could push for the playoffs, but I think there's teams that are really hitting their straps that have got more seasoned campaigners ready to go. I think the Chiefs are in a nice spot from where they were at the beginning of the season. The rhetoric coming out of the club. Let's go to Gloucester on Sunday and try and get that win, which absolutely cements us in the top eight. It means we've got top level European next year, and then
that's probably the important bit for them at the moment,
I would
isn't
think
it?
So.
Yeah, and I think that is for a lot of the teams. It's just getting in that top eight, then you're safe, you're out of the way, and then you can rebuild next season, work out where you are and where you're going. But I think this is fantastic as a league at the moment. Everybody can beat everybody, and even if you look back at some of Newcastle's games as well, they've come within fine margins.
That's the new coach effect, isn't it? Whenever you put a new coach into a team, there's always a bit of a bump. It'll be interesting to see what Newcastle do their last few games. Because Diamond will want them to get a win.
Well, they've got Sale next, haven't they?
They'll
target that.
Yeah, well, the Kings of the North.
You know, I'm not going to try and do that. No. You can actually do that. You are from North.
Yeah, well, almost.
Well, technically, by blood, I am.
Mm-hmm.
Mum's from Burnley in Lancashire.
Right, okay. No, that's why we get on, Coxie. You were running touch at the Chiefs game. How did you find it? It was another sold-out game. That was a great thing. The last two games at Sandy Park sold out. How did you find the atmosphere?
I tell you what, the atmosphere in Premiership games at the moment is fantastic. I think we've almost got this second wind of people wanting to watch rugby again. And I think by the league being really tight the way it is, I think everybody's buying in again.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wants to go again. You've got more people, like families and what have you, getting involved. I think it's brilliant at the moment.
The marketing people need a tick in the box because the whole running, they've branded the running, and you know, who's going to do well?
The running is really good.
Because it's given a coherent message. One of the problems is, are we watching European competition? Are we watching Six Nations?
No, you're back to knowing what you're watching, aren't you?
This is what's going on.
Yeah.
And they're putting that through all the comms, and I rate that.
Yeah, I do as well. And I think they're working really hard in the background because I'm involved with some of the stuff with PRL as well on some of the sort of sideline stuff. And they're working really hard to try and get more engagement from people from different demographics. And the running, I think it's a really nice way to sort of capture everything, isn't it? And you say, because what, we've only got two league games left? Three league games left now?
Three, isn't it? Yeah,
three league games left and then you're into the... the semis, finals, like
that's business end of the season.
It's proper business end, isn't it? And then also Europe as well. Mm-hmm. You got European stuff happening.
Yeah.
So like it's getting exciting now, and you can feel people getting excited about it.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
I feel for some of the teams though, and I like obviously as referees, we have this same problem that you get very fatigued, and same with the internationals is. So when everybody finishes the Premiership, if you're not involved in the internationals, you sort of get a little bit more of a layoff, a little bit more time to put your feet up. Then the internationals go back in and they do all the summer stuff and what have you. It's a bit the same for us as referees. We're waiting at the moment to hear about what's going to happen with the internationals and to work out whether you're going to have some time off or not, or how much time you're going to have off, or where you're going to be to be able to recoup. And I feel for teams at the moment and for people involved in rugby because it feels like there is a lot going on. And like you say about the Chiefs being fatigued over the weekend, I don't think those were the only guys.
No.
And you see the Newcastle result, I wonder if they're fatigued now, like mentally very fatigued.
No, I think they just came against Bristol that are just throwing the ball. I
mean, they found some form as well.
They have.
They found some serious form.
They have. They could bolt through. I mean, we were all writing them off at the beginning of the year. They weren't doing anything. Mm. And then suddenly they're hitting their straps at the right time.
Yeah.
And it'd be interesting because, again, Northampton and Quins have both got big European games that'll be on the back burner, whereas there is sole focus for the other teams in the mix. Prem is all that matters.
Yeah. And for Gloucester as well, I find this really interesting because it wasn't until somebody mentioned it the other day that actually this could be a stroke of genius for them. So they didn't have the best start to the season with Premiership. But each other competition, so the Cup and in Europe, they're winning at the moment.
Yeah.
Like they won the Cup, they've won, like they're on to the good stuff in the Europe,
of the European Challenge. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you win those two,
it's a good season.
Yeah, and it's also a good marketing campaign as well, because all of a sudden you've gone from having to write apology letters to now
the European Challenge Cup, do they qualify for the Champions Cup?
I believe so, yes. I believe you go.
So we'd then have, but would the eighth finishing team in England be relegated?
You're asking me some serious questions
now. Because that could be.
You look at me as if I pay attention to how that type of stuff works.
No, well, it's a mystery wrapped in an enigma, the European Challenge,
isn't it? It's like Newton's laws, isn't it?
Okay, so happy with the Prem?
Yeah, it was good.
Chiefs this weekend, this Sunday away to Gloucester.
Yeah, that'll be a good one.
And I think that is an important game. It'll be interesting to see what the selection is, because you could feel there was an element of fatigue amongst the squad. So does Rob throw in fringe players, or does he stick with his guys one last time and say, come on, fellas, get us this win?
I think it's a 50-50 chance of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
Because I think you can see some people need some rest, but at the same time, we've just spoken about, we're into the important bits of...
Well, it's
of
the games you want to play.
Exactly.
It's the games you want to play.
Exactly.
But on the flip, it is only the 1%ers. It's not massive. It's not like they're falling over, cramping up. It's just, you can just... One of the things with the Chiefs is it's all about emotion and physical intensity, and they're not quite... You just sensed against Bath, we weren't quite at that same point. Some of the lads were absolutely banging. But,
definitely. Your mate Jens.
Yendl, mate, he's a superstar.
You haven't mentioned him once yet.
No, I like Jens.
You're a big fanboy.
Let's move across to the...
Let's just have a quick rundown. I think it's important we have a quick rundown of the Premiership standings at the moment.
Go.
As long as I get this right and my Googling is correct.
Oh, yeah, it depends. Which
could be. Northampton first.
Yes.
On 54 points.
So Northampton are going to be in the playoffs, pretty much.
So it goes Northampton, Bath, Saracens, Bristol.
Yep.
Bristol. Then it goes Harlequin, Sale, Exeter, Leicester, Gloucester, Newcastle.
Yeah, but what you're saying is the final playoff position at the moment is 45 points. Leicester are in eighth on 39. So,
but you see, with it from eighth to first, there's not a lot of points in it.
No.
And then also, like, these can really slide over these next couple of games. I think this is really interesting.
You've got, you're two games away from being two big wins and you're right in the mix.
Yeah, exactly.
I think, I would think now the playoffs for Leicester are possibly a bridge too far, because they need lots of results to go their way, and they need to win everything with bonus points.
Yeah.
I think Chiefs, if we don't beat Gloucester this weekend, I think we're probably out of the mix for the playoffs.
Okay.
Sale, obviously, if they lose to Newcastle, they're not looking the part. And then the top teams are all playing against each other. So
there's some cracking fixtures this weekend as well.
Isn't it just?
So you've got Bath Saracens Friday night, which would be cracking. And that'll be a full house for, yes, for Bath. Leicester, Bristol on Saturday. Harlequins, Northampton.
Yeah.
Newcastle, Sale, which that'll be an interesting one.
Yeah.
See what happens there. And then Gloucester, Exeter.
Yeah. You're probably going to see, you could at the end of this weekend see the top four pretty much cement itself, or you could see it still stay wide open with 2 weeks to go.
And imagine with it still wide open with 2 weeks to go. Yeah. How exciting is that? I think it's a premiership for all the things that it's taken over the last sort of few months, and with clubs going under and what have you, I think this is probably one of the most exciting leagues at the moment and most engaging leagues.
And I'm also like, I'm quite happy to watch games as a neutral. Because you're going, oh, yeah, there's something riding on this. Whereas quite often, I want to watch Exeter Chiefs games, but I'm enjoying other fixtures because there is jeopardy.
Yeah, I feel there's some good neutrals in there, isn't there? There's some good games of rugby to watch. Yeah, and
I had some pals go and watch the Chiefs game that aren't really big on rugby. They're in the North Terrace, and they were loving the fact that my mate Davy Jones was bantering with
how nice was it when the sun's out as well?
Oh, God, yeah. Isn't it so much more fun.
But isn't it as well, when the sun comes out, mm-hmm, people's attitudes to stuff, it all gets happier, everybody's mingling around. You could see so many people in the crowd and across the other games as well, just chatting away to each other, but you're the opposite teams and what have you. I think that's lovely, and I really enjoy that about the game.
Yeah.
I really enjoy it.
I was a guest with Admiral Nelson and the guys from a business. Don't worry, it's a code name. It's a code name for the man. It's a code name for the man. So thank you for having me along, Admiral Nelson. But we were in the hospitality, and they asked me to do a little turn on the microphone.
Oh,
and
God.
I did my usual.
Who
did that? If you're a fan from Bath, you're going to have a terrible day. And then a few of them found me after the game and went, oh, I'll have terrible days like that again, please, Chris. So, yeah.
Serves you right.
You've got to put your head on the block, haven't you? Go put your head on the block.
You would as well when you've got a couple of ciders in you as
I
well.
I did, yeah. Inch's cider. Interesting.
Not a fan? You're a Thatcher's man, aren't you?
Well, I like Thatcher's hay. Yeah. Anything that...
Sweet.
Sanford Orchard's Devon Red as well. Go with that.
Oh, works, yeah. Well. No, that's the OG.
Yeah.
When you're in Devon...
Session ciders.
Yeah, Sanford Orchard's Devon Red is the OG.
Although, big shout out to my mate Patrick McCaig from Otter Brewery.
Yeah.
His boy Charlie's been picked in the England Universities team to play the French Universities, England students.
Get on.
So I remember when we were young, Charlie was in the England Lambs, which is the public school England team. And I was like, I could see he was bursting with pride.
Yeah.
And now his lads play at the French Universities is like legit. For the French, that's more important than the A team.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're playing over in France. And I was like, well done, mate. You've got to be so pleased with that.
Can we just talk? I'm going to digress, but it's on the subject of France, right?
Allez.
Oui. Oh, we're missing Ian here because he'd start spurting out.
I speak French.
I used to speak French in my caravan. Yeah. So I was, obviously the London Marathon's just gone.
Yep.
Big shout out to everybody involved in that. There was some
Don
unbelievable,
Armand did a sub
4. Yeah, some unbelievable efforts. My next door neighbour was in there. Hardly does any training. Just seems to be very good at running. Mm-hmm. Came in at 3.5 hours or whatever it was. Exactly. Never done a marathon before. Cool. Cheers, pal.
Am I the only one? I tried to break it down. I'm like, right. So let's look at that. So you're going 12 miles in because sub 4 is sort of the goal you got to get, isn't
yeah.
it? Yeah. So that's 12 miles in 2 hours. That means it's 6 miles in 1 hour. So
oh my God, here we go.
You're trying to do
Brad's
the stats.
Yawning.
So it's like 10 minute miles. Basically. 9 minute miles all the way.
Basically.
Then break a mile down onto the track. So you're doing like, it's a lap every, so it's like a minute every 250 metres.
All
like
you need to know is you can't do one. That's it.
Mate, I was sat there thinking, could I get close to this?
No. The answer is no.
And then the truth is, for me, if you're doing a marathon, you should run. So I'm not happy with the people that walk. You've got to run.
No. I think there are certain people that there are some people that don't have the ability to run,
yes,
but still want to partake. That's what I love about the London Marathon. Partake, run your own race.
Participate your own race because you just said they can't run. But that's a movie. Yeah, right. It's movie flipping.
Goes,
so moving
anyway,
on.
Anyway, no, I've not finished
oh,
my point.
Can we shout
sorry.
Out?
So anyway, so I
tried to move on three times.
No, I was a little that's bit engaged like. In the London.
Just to paint the picture for everybody, Coxie is sat. Now that Ian's not here, her feet are on the desk, shoes are off. She's totally reclined. This is the dame in her realm
yes,
entirely.
It is, and I'm not sorry. So anyway, London Marathon. Obviously, everybody's sort of posting and what have you. So it led me on to one of the algorithms of marathons. There is a half marathon just north of Bordeaux that you do 24 wineries and vineyards. whilst doing this marathon.
Oh,
half marathon.
Did you see the wine tasting bloke did sample the wine every mile of the London Marathon?
Did he? Oh, yeah. No, I didn't see that. That's
brilliant.
He's
very posh. Oh, yeah. And he's like drinking it. Oh, this is a 2006 Bordeaux. And then he's off he goes.
And
then
off he goes again.
So he's telling them what it was, everyone.
That's brilliant.
But so there's this half marathon
in France where basically if you look at the menu of it, it is fantastic. So you have a pasta party the night before.
Yeah.
The next day, they come pick you up from your hotel. They take you and you basically hit all these vineyards and you drink right the way through. And if you can't finish this half marathon, they come and get you on a golf buggy and take you to the end. Right. And then the next day, once you've finished all of the fun stuff, you continue your fun and carry on and do more wineries elsewhere. And they take you through like a whole menu and it gives you a whole menu of stuff.
So the Two Locks and a Cox annual first tour, if anybody wants to come on the Two Locks and a Cox tour with Chris Bentley, Ian Dunst and Sarah Cox, we're going to do a half marathon. Email brad@radiox.co.uk and we'll sort that one out.
Yeah, so now you can move on. Sorry, because I thought that was worthy of, okay, that's of a great. Bit of time.
No, well, I mean, we're pushing through quite nicely. Red Roses was a bit of a mismatch with Ireland, wasn't it? 88-10.
Yeah, that was an interesting one.
Huge shout out to my daughter. She went along, Beatrice Marie. She went to watch the game with Mum Hayley, and they had a whale of a time, got her shirt, got autographs from lots of people. She got a bit of a beef with Maggie Alphonse, but she'll talk about that herself.
Oh, wow, really?
She thought Maggie was her mate, then she thought she wasn't her mate. And I think it was just in Beatrice's head.
Oh, right.
But she's aggro now. She played the other week for Clumpton in the cluster fixture. And I forgot to mention they played against Ivybridge, and Ivybridge had a real banger come round the corner, and Beatrice sat her down.
Oh, well,
best tackle of her career to date.
Wow, so, well done, her.
Beatrice, this is for you. Well done. Great tackle.
Not that she listens
Hopefully
to
this is
pod.
Now your favourite rugby pod.
She has to listen to you every day.
She doesn't like this rugby pod.
Yeah, good.
So, I just wanted to put that one out there. So good. The Roses, 88-10, Ireland not really at the races. I mean, it sets up the Grand Slam decider in France this weekend.
Yeah, that's going to be a good one. That'll be really good. That's in Bordeaux as well.
Will the French get close, be honest?
I don't know. I genuinely don't know. The French have sort of peaked and troughed over the last couple of years. England, I'd say, are probably the most consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got everybody else building around that at the moment. And if you look at the sort of standings and what have you, these are also playing in now to qualification for World Cups and things.
Yeah, you've mentioned.
Yeah,
this,
yeah.
You?
So exactly. So I don't know. Even taking my sort of England hat off and referee hat off, I genuinely that could be either way.
Right. Okay.
Genuine either way. You need to lean more towards the.
Oh, sorry, was off the microphone. Yeah. Oh, that's no good.
Why are you playing on your phone again?
No, because there was a run on debut for England from Chiefs, and I'd forgotten her name. She won the props.
Good research, Chris.
Yeah, I know. I've let the side down, haven't
you
I?
You have, yeah.
Yeah. Our
mate Macy's back in the squad, though. She got called in.
Who's that, C-Mac?
Yeah, no, Macy Allen.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said my matey. I was like, C-Mac, yeah, she's cool. No, she's injured, isn't it? So, yeah, Maisie got called back in.
Yeah, she's back in.
Okay.
Friend of the show.
All right.
Good on her.
So we're happy with that one. The only other thing I want to talk about with regards to actually the playing of rugby before we go to Snapman and off the field is the Devon County Men's Cup final is going to be competed between Devonport and Exmouth after Exmouth came back to get an aggregate win of 80-77 playing against Brixham.
Oof.
So they were, five points behind. So lost at home by 5 points, had to go to Brixham and beat Brixham 33-41.
So on the
4th of May, the Sporting Blues take on the Mighty Cockles. And league game was a 17-10. The last 17-20, so Devonport beat Exmouth 17-20 in their last league fixture. So it's a real tight game.
That's a hell of a game.
So Devonport are going to go for the Devon double.
Excellent.
Devon Senior Men's
Trophy. Are they at Devonport when they play this?
I believe so. I'm not 100% sure on the final location, but I'm gonna guess it's the home fixture because I've played and won the Devon final.
Yeah, of course you dropped something. That's your claim to fame, isn't it? Though?
What, winning the Devon Cup final?
Yeah.
No, I won the Cheshire Cup final with New Brighton as well. I'll tell you what, should we take a little break on Devon's Radio X and have a listen to Statman?
Two
Two Locks and a Cox.
From Devon's Radio X with Exeter Chiefs.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
I'm here with Statman Dave Church, who was at the game on Saturday. What's the breakdown, mate?
It's obviously a bit of a disappointing result on Saturday for the Chiefs. Their first home defeat to Bath for 7.5 years or 2,729 days. It's also the first time Exeter had lost at home by more than 7 points since November 2021. So for 2.5 years. So, wow. Yeah, just a mass. Yeah, we've had it very good at home, especially against Bath. So these things have a way
in the
of
paper.
Themselves out eventually.
I wrote about it in the paper and I've talked about it on the pod. A big game in Europe, to come back, you've got to go above and beyond to get a draw in the league. And it just felt like the boys were tired.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it looked like to me. I think they've just, it's just an experience thing as well, isn't it? I think that's what Rob said after the game as well. So
yeah. Have we got anything else on that, or should we look to the future and our game on Sunday with Gloucester?
I always like to look at positives, so we'll look forward. We'll look to Gloucester. Chiefs have won 6 of their 13 Premiership trips to Kingsholm. Their last win, though, was a couple of years ago now, October 21. But generally, these fixtures have been win one, lose one, win one, lose one. So the fact that we've lost two on the trot.
How's it looking? So the stats are saying we should win this one?
I think we're due a win, is my view, as a massive optimist. And the record on artificial pitches, I know we talked about this, and you guys talked about this a few weeks ago when we played at Kingsholm in the semi-final. And actually, I had a bit of a deep dive into it a few weeks ago, and it's really, the record on artificial pitches basically matches their away record over the same period. So it's about 50-50. There's a slight pattern to it, though, and this is possibly where it gets interesting, although this is my definition of the word interesting. So recently, it's 3 wins in the last 12 on artificial pitches for Chiefs, which isn't very good. And actually, that's since their last win at Gloucester, which was November 21, as I said. And their first 16 games on artificial was not a great record, was 7 wins out of 16 and a draw. But there was a period for about 3 years, from 2018 to 2021, that coincided with Chiefs being dominant domestically, where they won 7 and drew 2 out of 11 games. So it suggests to me that there's a bit of a method to playing on these pitches, and maybe it's a mindset thing, but once they get the hang of it, they'll fly, I reckon.
This week. I'm paying reference. I'm hosting the end of season dinner. And anyone that's listening, don't listen too hard, because I think that Gus Van Sant remade the film Psycho, shot for shot, exactly the same. And I think the Exeter Chiefs are sort of doing exactly the same thing as they did about 8 years ago in bringing a whole team through. They've got a European nemesis. It was Clermont. It's now Toulouse. And there's just so much synchronicity in the way it's happening.
I think the only difference is we're doing it faster this time. I think this year feels like 2014-15 and 15-16 almost all rolled into one.
Yeah.
So hopefully it means we're due a double in a couple of years.
Yeah. Looking at the league, the playoffs is lovely, but I think if we're going to be realistic, it's more, we just need one more win to guarantee top 8. And this, if we beat Gloucester, that's pretty much it. Am I right with that?
Yeah, I think so. I think so. Gloucester certainly won't be able to catch us if we beat them. So
yeah, and that from my perspective seems to be. I mean, that's mission complete really for the season. We've had a good run, and it just, unless the boys are going to dumbfound me, it just seems like I can go talk about what I know. We played Coventry. No, back in 2004. If you go right back in time, we had a team and we were top of the log, and we lost 4 of our last 6 games, and it was just because the lads, we'd all just fatigued, we'd put everything into the season. We ran with a squad of about 28. I mean, they're running with a squad of about 70 nowadays, but I think the guys mentally and emotionally have given an awful lot for a young group. And there's been a huge catharsis for the senior guys. Slady,
you know, completing his character arc, getting back in the England team. I think everybody is due a bit of a rest.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think that, it's been quite a long year, hasn't it? I think that run of games up until January was took a lot out of them. So I've got a quick stat for the women's game on Sunday, which is also on Sunday against Gloucester.
Gloucester Hartbury. But you announced for some unbeknownst reason we're playing it at Sandy Park rather than as a curtain raiser.
It does seem very weird that you've got a reverse fixture, but I guess that's to do with the seedings in the cup and the kind of way it is. So Gloucester Hartbury have played 4-1-4 at Sandy Park. They're the only side to win a league game at Exeter other than the Chiefs since November 2020.
Right.
So it's not a great omen, but these runs have to come to an end. Like Bath's record at Sandy Park came to an end this weekend. Maybe it's Gloucester Hartbury's turn this week to have a run. And I've got one stat on Johnny Gray as well, because obviously he's... left Exeter today. He's the most outstanding
ever
seen with his wingspan. He shouldn't have missed any tackles.
What's the stat? I was preempted.
His first 13 starts for Exeter Chiefs yielded 13 wins, and his first 17 starts yielded 15 wins. The only defeats were the quarter final against Leinster and the Premiership final against Harlequins, and on the way picked up a Premiership trophy and a Champions Cup. It's not a bad start.
No, he's done quite well. He's continued the rich vein of second rows that have represented the club.
it's a proud heritage, yeah.
I know. He didn't come up with me to say anything to me about how I've laid foundations, but you know, I'll sort of take the narrative on and pretend that he did.
Yeah, he's probably too embarrassed.
Yeah, I think so. All right, Churchy, that's Bob on. That's Statman for the week. You're listening here on Devon's Radio X.
Two locks and a cox.
From Devon's Radio X with Exeter Chiefs.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.
You're listening to Two Locks and a Cox with Chris Bentley and Sarah Cox, and no Ian Dunstan. One final thing on the field that I forgot to mention. We gave a shout out to the Sidmouth Colts. They beat Ivybridge. They won 24-17. So they're Devon Colts champions. And now, I love this, it's like they go on to the next round, the next end of level buddy. They're now playing the winner of Perranporth or Penryn on the 4th of May at Launceston.
At Launceston, do you remember Launceston?
So the Devon champs are going to play the Cornwall champs, Colts. There's nothing more passionate than Colts rugby.
And in Launceston.
Lanson.
Because isn't one half of the pitch is in Devon and the other half is in Cornwall?
Yeah.
Genuine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember when Launceston were up there?
I do, yeah.
We
played them at Sandy Park. And they had Wayne Reid, Tony Roakes were playing for him. It's good.
Yeah.
Rocky was just running around. Tony Roakes just used to tackle your bootlaces.
He's sevens
exponent.
Now.
Yeah. Well, he's always been sevens.
Has he?
Yeah. But he was the fittest man in the galaxy. So, should we move to off the field?
Go on then.
Well, thanks.
Do a Chris Bentley. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well, is that what we're going to have?
Yeah.
Okay. So, the.
Hello.
Should we go to the oval ball first, or do you want to do the round ball first, or do you want to do the oval ball first?
Do your oval ball.
So the oval ball is Johnny Gray leaving early. Quite an interesting one. Like it's only a few weeks left in the season, and he's gone. And I know that he was leaving.
You're the insider on this.
I think this is going to be more a speculative conversation,
right?
Because it's been mentioned in dispatches that he signed for Bordeaux in France. I don't think it's official. Next year we know he's away.
Yeah.
But to leave with like 2 months left in the season, I'm assuming there's going to be some sort of announcement.
How does that work for you as a player then? So is that, and take this as an aside, would that be something that say the club doesn't want you anymore, they want to free up some money?
Yep.
Or would that be, look, you're not going to be here, because I think he's out injured at the moment, isn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a long-term injury.
Yeah.
Would that be, look, go and explore what you want to explore. We're not going to hold you back. We know that you want to go next season anyway, so just crack on.
Yeah, I think the you can have the ignominy of being in a contract and know you're moving on.
Yeah.
And you're coming towards the end of the contract and you're like, I don't really want to be here. They don't really want me to be here.
Yeah.
And you have to be a professional sport. And this is part of professional sport that people don't get.
Yeah.
Is when you are that's it, it's done.
Yeah, what do you do? Because you mentally, surely you've just checked out, you're like...
Well, yeah, but if you're a professional, you do your job.
Yeah, okay.
And I think that's the thing now. I don't think there's any inferences that Johnny Gray is anything but a model pro. I think this is more...
100%.
I think this is more the club, because they've got such a big squad, and they've got, you know, Russie and Lewis have already definitely signed on for the next few years. Well, who would you rather play? A lad that's going to be with you for the future, or a lad that's going to go and make his big money deal probably over in France? And you go, well... We're not in any mega knockout fixtures now. What we want to do is get experience through the legs that are with us.
Yeah.
So there's a pragmatic decision, isn't there? So
how do you have that conversation?
I think...
Because you had one, it came about in a roundabout way, didn't it? Like when they wanted to terminate your contract for the next season.
Yeah.
And they tried to polish a turd and say that we've got an offer for you after this, and you didn't hear any of it.
No. So I've not done the retirement story. So,
yeah, we've had the retirement story, but...
Rob, towards the end of my career, I'd grown a bit more... confidence to speak openly with the coaches.
Yeah.
So I'd gone in and seen Rob and said, you know, I was 33 at the time. I was 32 going on to 33, I think. And I was like, Rob, I really want to get one more year.
These are like dog years, aren't they? Like, in rugby, that's old.
Yeah, I'd done well.
starting life.
And you know, half your memories aren't real, but ostensibly, my recollection of the conversation was, Chris, you know, we like having you around. You're good for the squad. You know, you run the socials and what have you. You get injured quite a lot, and you are quite expensive. So, no, but Rob was you'd rather have somebody be straight with you. I've always preferred this. There's some games where Rob would have said, "Chris, we're not picking you because you're playing well enough," and you're like, "All right, what do I need to get better at?" Well, this, and this, and you go, "Do you know what? I get that. I'll try and get better at this, 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 and this."
When
you get lip service, and I've had coaches in the past that are like, "Oh, you've done really well, but we're going to go with this bloke." It's like, well, that's a difficult place to be because you don't know.
Yeah.
But Robert sort of said, you know, what we're going to, and how it works is if a club wants you to stay in the Premiership, you're not supposed to be speaking with other clubs until January of the end of your contract. Back in my day, that's how it was.
Okay.
So in your contract, you could only speak with your club until January.
Yeah.
And then once you're in January, it's open season. And you'll notice signings invariably get announced
from January onwards. Yeah.
So that was the conversation we had. I think if you're going overseas, you can do it. But if you're staying with your in the Prem,
yeah.
So Rob was like, "We're going to have a look at the marketplace. If we don't get anyone by February, then we'll probably keep you for another year."
Yeah.
So I translated that in my head.
Yeah,
as,
you were convinced you were going to stay.
Year.
Yeah.
But that's how it goes. Now, someone like Johnny Gray, who's taking up a big chunk of the salary cap.
Yeah.
You know, there's not an insubstantial amount of money that the club can wipe if they'd have had a grown-up conversation. Look, Johnny, you're off to France. You've got a load of money in the bank. It could be that, or it could well be that he's got an opportunity to play somewhere. There might be a club that needs a second row for 3 or 4 months.
I find that fascinating.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. Like,
well, I did, when I was at Oral, I'd broken my ankle early in the season, my last season there. And by the time I'd rehabbed in December, I went and saw Maurice Lindsay and said, "Look, Maurice, you know, I've been at this club for 5 years, want to stay longer." And he gave me the hard line and said, "No one's being renewed. If you want to stay, you can see out the rest of your contract by all means. But at the end of the season, there's no rugby for you." And they'd signed 2 second rows when I got injured. They signed a Peter Palapoy and Dan Cook. So it was 2 second rows came in to cover for my injury. So I looked at it and thought, well, you know, Peter Palapoy is a Samoan international, Dan Cook's Premiership campaigner. I'm probably going to battle like sin to not get back into this team.
Yeah.
And my agent said there's an opportunity to go to France next week.
Oh, so that was your croissant crusade, wasn't it?
So I signed to go to Biarritz because I looked at it. I was 24 and I was like, well, I can stay here and fight like sin to possibly get back in the team and not play.
Yeah.
Or I can go over to France where they need a second row to play next week against Perpignan.
And then here they are.
And then
there you were.
Absolutely
full
failed.
To the
put on
20
kilos at a whale of a time.
Biarritz nowhere to be seen anymore.
They're in the Pro D, duh.
I don't think so.
Are they not?
I think they've dropped out of
No,
that.
I think they're in the Pro D, duh, still. Oh. They're sponsored by Grindr. They are. Grindr is the gay man's dating app. It's on the.
Well, we know what that
shorts.
Is. You
well,
didn't
some
need
people
to tell
didn't.
Everyone.
I just wanted to share that. I thought it was good. I thought that was a nice progressive move from Biarritz. Well done. My former club.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
All right, anyway.
So that's that. So
croissant monster.
So we've done the Johnny Gray speculation, and I think we've speculated as well as anybody else can. But God, well done, Johnny Gray, part of the team that won the European and Premiership double, and a very important addition to the squad for his 51 games, I think he played. But on the flip, the King
no,
is...
No, he never got to... He 49.
Nothing wrong with being short of a milestone, but... The King is dead, long live the King. Lewis Pearson fan club reigns supreme, so we're pleased with that.
Here he goes.
So, moving on, Sarah... and this is a good one because
oh, no!
What?
Oh, I've liked one of the tweets.
Oh, you've liked one of Nottingham Forest tweets. So we're moving across to the round ball, and I think this is a topic that's worth having a discussion around.
Excuse me.
Nottingham Forest played against the club that I support, Everton, only casually, on the weekend.
Oh, I'm mortified. And I've pressed the wrong button.
You can unlock it.
Well, I have, but yeah. Flipping heck, how long has that been liked
so,
for?
If somebody probably screen grabbed that and they'll say, can't see, he says this.
Oh, I know. No.
Nottingham Forest had three possible penalty decisions all not go their way on the weekend, and they've come out with a tweet saying how they're very...
Tweet? There are several
There's several tweets castigating the PMGOL, is that
correct? PGMOL.
PGMOL.
Professional Game Match Official... And I'm not sure what the L is.
Limited.
Oh, it's limited, is it? Oh, right. Oh, yeah, because they're a separate business, aren't they? Yeah.
Prior to the game, Nottingham Forest registered an issue that the VAR official was a Luton Football Club fan and therefore shouldn't have anything to say on a game between two fellow relegation rivals. And then on three occasions, there were possible penalty shouts. The VAR did not interject. And Nottingham Forest have come out with the strongest terms possible. Well, Coxie, can you just say one of the...
I can't. They're like full statements in each of these tweets. I find this fascinating. Oh, I've hit the microphone again. Sorry. Yeah. I find this fascinating. Yeah. Like, these tweets start with three extremely poor decisions.
Well, this is not about individuals, but rather how the integrity of the game is seen. We know match officials do not allow outside factors to influence their decision-making, that all referees are required to declare their allegiances to PGMOL to avoid perceived conflict, harm to the game's reputation or integrity. However, it's clear they must amend its rule of allegiances to account for contextual rivalries in the league table, not just local rivalries. Newcastle stands by its request for greater transparency.
Nottingham,
to further protect the game's reputation as intended in PGMOL's statement of allegiances. Blah, blah, blah. So there's a really strong influence that things are not good and that everybody's been against Nottingham Forest. Coxie.
But it's fascinating. It's fascinating. Like, and I could be wrong in this, but how I understand this, that in the Premiership, there are governances around certain things that you don't tweet about and get engaged with. We've seen several high-profile players such as Jack Noel comment about referees,
yes,
and be sanctioned for it. Yes. So there's a bit of a rule.
Joe Marler sort of pushes very close to the line, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think Anthony Watson as well. Yep. I think he was talked to about it all. Anyway, so I find this fascinating that they're allowed to do this. And it's like these tweets, like they just open the door to everything that you don't want to happen. Like for me, and like three extremely poor decisions, three penalties not given, which we simply cannot accept. This is coming from an official Twitter account of Nottingham
Listen
Forest.
To Coxie. She's
baffled.
You are flabbergasted.
I'm flabbergasted.
But this plays into the problem. And then Stan Collymore's come out and he's had a very strong tweet where he sort of said,
we haven't finished this bit first, because then you can go on to that. Yeah, like, but this is like, we warned the PGMO that the VAR is a Luton fan before the game, but they didn't change him. I'm like, okay, but why is this now public? Like, it's interesting. I won't read out all of this because these are like statements and paragraphs in themselves, but that first tweet in itself, that was 2 days ago, that got 44 million reaches. There's 13,000 comments. I'm not even going to look at that. 54,000 retweets and 178,000 likes, of which is not one of mine now.
Yeah.
And then a second one comes out.
And they double down.
They double down. Yeah. We've doubled down on red here. Yeah. And like, Nottingham Forest has today submitted a formal request to the PGMOL to release into the public domain the audio recordings between officials during yesterday's match against Everton and Goodison Park.
We're disappearing down a rabbit hole with this.
We are, but I think this is a really interesting rabbit hole.
For everybody that's listening, it would be well worth just searching Nottingham Forest social media or their website. They've put it official on their website.
Listen.
This is the greater piece is the culture surrounding the officiating of sport.
But this Ashley Young guy keeps appearing. The club has requested.
Well.
I have no idea who this man is, but from this tweet, he looks a bit of a menace. We firmly advocate the broader football community and supporters have access to the audio and transcript for full transparency. Ensure this bit tickles me a little bit. Ensuring the integrity of our sport is upheld. Are we sure that the integrity of our sport, and when we tweet about that, are we sure we're upholding that when we do this? But then it doesn't stop. We continue. And this one is a big one. I'm not...
Listen to her.
I can't. Welcome to
Two Locks and a Cox on Devon's Radio X, where Sarah Cox talks about football. Go on, Coxie. Go on.
I can't believe it. And then they go on. I will not bore you because this will be like the SpongeBob SquarePants 4 hours later. It goes on. Whoever is behind this X account is the clearly very strong opinions in this. But I find it fascinating that the club has allowed them to post this on their behalf.
Well, I would suggest that the club's official legal team have probably read through it because they're so close. Because otherwise, there must have been a sanction against them.
But surely you turn around and you say, we'll take all of this offline. We've raised our concerns. Yep. We will get it dealt with in the background. So not to stir up the pot. Mm-hmm. And so not to start then this horrible witch hunt for these match officials, of whom get hard enough time as it is.
I know.
But honestly, this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs. Yes. I thought you had a word count on X, but apparently not.
No, if you've got an official account, you can have as many as you like.
Yeah! A 1,000 people have bookmarked this. This one has not got as much traction, I must admit. It's only got 39,000 likes.
Right.
It's too long, that's why, because even you've switched off now. But I
haven't switched off, Coxie, but just very briefly, so against this, Stan Collymore said, you know, unless anyone has proof that referee or assistant referee has been involved in deliberate corruption, then nobody has any place daring to suggest it.
No, but what's the context of the tweet that you're talking about? Because it's not football, is it?
No, he's gone back over Nottingham Forest.
Oh, he's gone back over this
as
well?
So he's replying, it's about time somebody said it. He invites any support or legal firm to do one thing, provide examples of proof or corruption against your club, put up or shut up, because the constant erosion of standing of officials has created a dearth of talent and numbers, which in turn leaves us arguably with poor pool to pick from. Corrupt, do me a favour. Being a poor ref and a corrupt ref are worlds apart, and it's now accepted to go on. But he's made a very valid point about it, and this is why we're talking about this, because it's the greater ecosystem of sport.
Yes,
is people are going after officials and officialdom through formal channels, and they're inferring corruption and bias.
That, I would say, for me personally, is probably one of the worst things for somebody to accuse you of, is corruption.
Well, when Wayne Barnes sent off Dylan Hartley in the Premiership final, it was not because he used the F word; it was because he called him a cheat.
Yeah,
you're an effing cheat, and he said he's called me a cheat. That he's got to go bang straight away.
Yeah,
and everybody came down on him, but we're edging further and further into this field. And I spoke to another podcast who were very upset about some decisions on the weekend. It's like, no, take it beyond that.
But what I get that there are some decisions that people are not going to like. There are mistakes that get made by referees. We understand that. We've just spent 2 days in Twickenham again going over some of those clips, going over weird things that happen in games so that we can get some consistency. And that was the one thing that we spoke about, is that we want consistency with our refereeing performances so that the teams, the players, the management and the fans know what to expect. But I find this stuff fascinating. But for anybody to come to me, if you're tweeting a picture of me at the moment,
I'm just saying that my daughter's texting me to bits. She shouldn't be. She's at school. So
put your phone down. You're supposed to have it on airplane mode.
Okay.
Anyway, for me to be accused of corruption, there is one thing that we work very, very hard on, and it's corruption is not what we want anywhere near us. Mm-hmm. Because the amount of stuff, and people just, I don't think, realise what you have to go through in the background. For ultimately, this is my job. This is my livelihood.
Yep.
Why on God's earth would I want to put myself in line for corruption? It's not worth it. Do you know what I mean?
But that one's
probably the worst, isn't it?
You see bad apples and bad actors on very rare occasions. But the inference here that the whole organising committee are...
flabbergasting.
I got it.
Flabbergasting.
I got it. So, I think this is a topic that will roll and roll, and it's very interesting to hear from you as an official. And I've enjoyed hearing your...
That's horrible. Yeah. That is not a nice position to be in, because those match officials work very, very hard in the background. And actually, two of our referees went and spent a day with them.
Right.
Up at their training ground. So I think this was before all of this kicked off. But I find that really interesting that, yeah, that whole corruption piece has come up, and the detail of that has now been publicly aired on X without an investigation.
Yeah.
Like, I feel that...
Having gone down the rabbit hole with it and looked at Nottingham Forest, there is a... Through the season, there's been a lot of 50-50 decisions have not gone their way.
See, I'm not a football fan, so I have no idea.
It's confirmation bias. If you go looking for something, you'll probably see it. There'll probably be loads of 50-50 calls that you're not getting. And when you're at the bottom of the league and you're battling. So they've now come up with a narrative that everybody's against them. But there's been a sit down and, right, let's get rid of Nottingham Forest.
God, really?
I don't know. They were my second team. Neil Webb used to play for them. I quite liked him.
No idea who that is either. I really have no idea on football. Okay. I'm not really a sports fan outside of this.
Right, well, we'll leave that one. It's going to run and run. We've still got a bit to get through. There's been an interesting thing while we're still off the field. Brain cooling treatment for concussion being trialled. Obviously, we had Sam Peters in. It's interesting for us.
Yeah. And go wild. Come on, Chris.
There's been a nice piece on the BBC website by Felicity Kvesic, who is the wife of Matt Kvesic, former chief, now playing at Coventry. Oh, yes. Will Chudley hung up his boots.
He said he's done. Chudley. Will. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And if you want to see an outpouring of emotion for a genuinely good egg, Will Chudley is that man.
Yeah.
So I think he's might have one or two
an
more games left.
An absolute stalwart of rugby.
He's just a proper good egg. Yeah. Well in Chudley.
Let's get him on the pod, shall we?
He's going to the Past Players Golf Day. He's got a team in.
Is he? Oh, yeah.
Oh! Should we put a team in? You could be the bandit. Basically, you score for the three of us that'll be rubbish.
Yeah, but I don't think I can take that much responsibility on Coxie for Goliath.
Just for everybody who's aware, Coxie was a European standard golfer.
No. Don't start rumours like
were.
That. No, not quite.
Go on. What were you?
I was on a pathway to start something like that.
Right. You're very good at golf. Okay, yeah, so anyway, brain cooling treatment for sports-related concussion is being trialled in professional rugby union. The polar cap works by delivering targeted cooling to the head and neck for 45 to 60 minutes. In all honesty, I think this is something that we're going to see more and more of tech that's going to try and protect players, but the chap that's put it together, where has he said it? This isn't about trying to get people back day by day or seven, you know, get them back from 10 days to 7 days. This is about longer term looking after them so that they don't have mega issues in the future. And it's come from ice hockey, I believe, originally.
Oh, wow.
But I think that the only way to make rugby safer is to play this rugby. I'm reading Sam's book. It's quite interesting. I'm beyond.
Where are you
now.
In Sam's book? Well, give us some snippets of that.
I think the principal thing is
you were harping on saying how wonderful this book is, and then you've got the floor to talk about this.
I want to complete the novel before I do that. And the main question is: were there bad actors that could have, should have done more? I think it's more. It's not. It's this is not murder. It's more manslaughter. Has there been recklessness towards the health and care and support of players? Because the game now, I think, is safe to crack on. Everybody is aware of the risks. Everybody knows where they're at. And you've got a very nuanced point that sports people are always going to want to play.
Yeah.
So it's how you safeguard them in that position, or whether you say, well, look, you know, this is a real injury risk that you may have for your future. You make the call.
I think it's good you've got innovation like this coming out.
I think so. But on the flip, I also think that you've got to say, well, you know, Well, you're always challenging physiology. You always want to get back faster. But as everybody argues, you know, if my knee's no good, I can have a replacement knee when I'm older. You can't have a replacement brain. And if you did, it starts to bring in philosophical challenges.
Here he goes. Yeah.
A silicon brain and what have you. If I took your brain and replaced it with a silicon brain and put your actual brain into a silicon robot, where do you exist? In the robot or in the brain? It's challenges of the self.
What?
It's philosophy. It's Descartes. No, cogito ergo sum? No, okay.
No, you've got a degree in philosophy, so
okay, let's move
that leaves
on.
Us.
Let's move to In the Bin! There was a very interesting piece in The Telegraph about payments in community rugby.
I'm going to leave the floor to you because you've got a very strong opinion on this. So well, you can no. start first. You've got a strong opinion on community rugby, full stop. So I will get your views first.
I think you always... Nuance is a very good word for a lot of rugby union. The problem is Tony Rowe is absolutely magnificent, and I maintain, and I'll say this, he can be a difficult man at times, but that we should build a statue for him. He's done for rugby union in Devon, in the southwest, what nobody else... Well, full stop for rugby union that no one else will ever do. That's come into a rugby club that is... challenging, but is not going to do much more, and made it European champions. Nobody can get there. The barrier to entry is too great now. But what he has done is he's given the green light for lots of other people involved in business to think that they too can do what he's done by throwing money at rugby clubs. And it's created arms races across the country and the nations where people come into clubs, put money in, and the RFU have got a mega challenge to try and make the game sustainable, so you don't have cases like Old Eltamians, my club, Oral, Wakefield. There's Mounts Bay. There's a plethora of clubs where people have come in, invested money, think they're going to do things, hasn't happened. They built it on foundations of sand, and when the money person pulls out, the club goes pop. Pretty much. So as you go down the levels, should remuneration of players be an important thing? My personal feeling is no. You've got to put everything around players other than remuneration so that they enjoy being part of a rugby club.
You see, yeah, but that's a very old fart mentality from you. Like, the modern day, unfortunately, is geared around... And you're starting
Coxie,
to see this.
You always say old fart, and
you
it's a very nasty ad hominem mean...
Like, oh, here we go. Just, he's on a philosophical...
It's not, no, but you're attacking me, not the concept. So... Well, old fart. Just say,
you
Chris,
are an
I don't.
Fart.
I'm not. I'm 44.
Exactly. An old Young. Fart. In rugby years, you're an old fart.
Back to the plot.
No, back to the plot. I wonder now if we are starting to see a change in people's attitudes towards doing things. So there tends to be now, and I've seen this in other areas, where can you do this for me? Yeah, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
And I don't know if rugby is in a position that they can do, well, I've just created a wonderful club for you, so therefore, here
you see,
are.
Yeah, go on.
So, because ultimately,
yep.
remuneration is that, you know, finances and physical money are what pays your bills. A wonderful club and having a wonderful setup and a nice community, yep. does that pay your bills?
Yep.
Probably not. So are we seeing the movement of players from one community club to another and following some of that remuneration?
Because somebody wealthy is going, we want to get promoted.
But
let's
not just
pay
that.
The
but if you think some of these players are university students,
yep.
so they rely on that little bit of top up to get through university and have a little bit of a cash spare. Mm-hmm. Because we all know how difficult it is to get through university when you're on your uni loans and et cetera. Yep. So... why couldn't you get remunerated for that as a university student and use that as a vehicle to be able to not only play a good quality of rugby with some of the best players in the community game, yeah. but also be able to pay for your life throughout university? Mm-hmm. Like, where's the contrast? Where do you stop with
no,
that?
No, but I think this is where I'm coming from. It's quite nuanced because there are always going to be cases where somebody might be really in a difficult spot and would love to play but can't afford to play because there's petrol and there's time off work and there's shift work or you're a student, and that's where you have this nuanced point. But if you take a bell curve of distribution, you know, at one end is the destitute that can't afford it, and at the other end is like Rosslyn Park. You've got City Traders. Mm. Back in the day when I played Rosslyn Park, they had the highest insurance bill in the whole of the rugby pyramid because all their lads were futures traders in the city. So they're earning
really?
Hundreds of thousands of pounds.
Yeah.
So if someone paid them £100 boot money, it didn't really matter.
Right. Okay.
But if they could be introduced to Merrill Lynch or some other mega firm, they were like, oh, yes, well, this is the club for me.
Yeah,
and so you have different requirements in different places. I've mentioned Wharfdale before. If you're at Wharfdale, they're probably going to have to compensate the players for the petrol because they're coming from all over the county.
Yeah.
Because it is in the middle of nowhere, and yet they're competing in the national leagues regularly. So there are different challenges, but the fundamental for me with rugby union is the Corinthian spirit. I want to play this. You know, I mentioned my daughter at the the cluster fixture of the week where they just pitched up and played and they all got together. And that's what rugby union for most people should be. I think the bigger challenge, and this is what the RFU are trying to address, is that the length of commitment that you have to make to be a part of a club, that the season runs for a very long time through some very difficult weather and what
have you. Travel at the moment.
And a lot of people are going, well, I'd quite like to play. And you get clubs, once you get to like level 5 and 6, well, I'm not going to play away this week. I remember when I went to Exmouth and Mike Gregory used to be my one of my mentors, and I thought, Oral, the only excuse is death. You're dead or someone close to you is dead or you're flat out. And so I've got this mentality and I've gone to Exmouth and where's our tight end prop? He's gone shopping with his missus. I'm like, what? What? No one's dead. Why is he not here going flat out?
Yeah.
And you've got to, I had to sort of dampen down a bit and go, well, actually, we don't, you know, winning and losing is part of it, but it's more being in this collective.
Yeah.
And obviously, you've now got professional rugby where winning is everything.
Yeah,
and we get remunerated and we have to make this work.
Yeah.
Whereas if you're playing for Exmouth thirds, as Ian might do, it's just having a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And so you've got this huge differential between the pyramid of who's doing what. And there's got to be points where you go, well, at this level, we definitely, you know, at National One, lads are going from Plymouth to Darlington Moden Park. It's 9 hours on a bus.
Yeah.
And you have to go on a bus because you can't afford to fly there. So you're doing 18 hours travel for ostensibly 5 hours of entertainment or 4 hours of entertainment. Those boys need to have some level of compensation. But the thing for me is if you've only got 1,000 people coming through the gate and they're paying a tenner, you aren't making it, and you've got to turn on the lights. You've got to pay the staff that are serving the drinks and what have you. You aren't making that much money to pay the players.
Yeah.
So it becomes difficult, and you have to, for mine, is create a culture whereby, you know, if you give somebody £5 and he goes to the bar and buys a pint for £5, then there's £5 in the economy. But if you say, I'll give you a beer token, which buys you a beer that's worth £5, but it's only costing the club £1 to buy that barrel of beer in, then that's a better way to do it. And there's things you can do within clubs, but feeding the players, giving them beer, you know, car sharing, so pooling the cars, doing a bit of a logistics. So they love each other, giving them great kit. And one of the big things, I'm a massive fan of Stash. My boys from South Moulton mentioned it, and hard luck, South Moulton, old Elizabethans, pumped them. And that's not the players' fault. It's my fault. It's Ben Gatehouse's coach, because neither of us could make the game. So sorry to South Moulton,
that's
boys.
That's not good from you.
You're going without a coach. I was at Chiefs. I couldn't not be at Chiefs. I know. I let the boys down. I felt bad about that. I did feel bad about that because Malton's a cracking group of guys. The big thing was I wanted them to get out on a cup run. So I've heard they play Stags, and I really wanted to play Stags on the bus. But we won't talk about that any further.
I
feel if you can create a cultural fix, and there's an exemplar at the moment in Devonport. They don't pay, and they've just moved into the National Leagues, and they've now got a real challenge.
Yeah.
They've now got a real challenge.
Now
because
what are they
suddenly,
do?
Circling Sharks will come along and say to some of the star players, well, we'll give you £200
You can go up to the top of the hill and play in National One.
But this is where you test your culture. And for me, if your culture is strong enough, the vast majority will go, well, do you know what? We'll stay here. This way. Because then you've got to say, well, where does this club want to go? Do you want to go to the Premiership? But, you know, is your goal to go to the Premiership? If so, then yes, we have to pay you. But if we just want to be a decent team in our league, this is our level. This is where we're good. Because the league system's got a bit to answer for because everybody has an aspiration to be the best. And when I was at Exmouth, I was like, look, guys, we're a really nice community club. We should just stay at this level.
Do you not think cash is king?
It's difficult, and this is why I love rugby, because I am an old fart that wants the Corinthian ideal.
Correct.
Where you do it, and I don't see anything wrong with that. And sometimes you're using old as a bad thing. On this occasion,
not at all. No. I don't think old is a bad thing, because it comes with that a lot of experience, understanding, and you're in a place. You're in a place at the moment in your life where you are very content. You've done all the things that pretty much you want to have done. You're in a position financially that you're comfortable enough to live.
There's skin,
Christopher, and then there's you. And I think it's interesting because, again, people that are younger aren't necessarily in that position where you've got a more philosophical look upon life and the contentment, because people have not experienced that yet. They've not been in a position. But you wind this back 15 years ago or even 20 years ago when you're a lot younger and you're into this sort of league structure and what have you. If somebody said to you, I'll give you 250 quid a game, or you can go down the bottom of the hill and you can play for a team that have got a wonderful culture, but you ain't going to get remunerated for anything. I'm pretty sure you'd have taken the 250 quid a game.
Oh, I did.
Exactly.
But the thing was, that was predicated because the level that the club played at. So I went from a club called Caldy that were at the time were absolutely dire. I went to New Brighton that was semi-pro.
Caldy are in Championship now.
I know. And then I went, obviously, the Bentley effect, you know. And then
20 years later.
and then I moved on to Oral, and then I was a professional rugby player. And then as a professional rugby player, absolutely, money and opportunity are things you've got to look at. But if you're a community club player, and this is where it comes back to, what is the ambition of your club?
But also, where do you draw the line at community club then?
Well,
if you're a community club player,
the key point I made was nuance. So I think the national leagues, if you're, and I'm upset at the structure of the national leagues, because teams have to drive past 7 or 8 teams that will give them a decent game to go and play a team at the other side of the country. And, you know, Plymouth are the best supported team in National One. They will get 25 fans will travel with them to the bigger away games.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe 50, and you're going, well, there's no benefits to the club they're visiting. Whereas if there's local derbies going on. And
yeah, I don't disagree with that.
There's edge in a game. You're going to get maybe 200-300 people that are going to spend over the bar. Your revenues are going to be better, and it's all going to be nicer. And it starts to become really. And it's nuance is the key, because and this is where Bill Sweeney, and I don't think he's the greatest man for the job. He's got one hell of a job, because you've got elite level professional rugby players, and you've got big fat beer swilling people, and they're all within the same pyramid. But one of the biggest things is trying to limit the aspiration of the clubs and saying, look, you don't have to aim for the Prem. You can just be really good at this level and we can win some local games and it'd be great. And you'll get beer tokens, we'll feed you, we'll get you a good stash. The local restaurants and what have you around town will give you a discount. You'll have a nice feel for it. Now, if you're better than this team, what we're going to do is we're going to recommend you move on to the club that's at a higher level and go and play for them with our blessing and earn your money. And when you're done, come back and play for us for our seconds or our thirds or be a part of it. And this is something that I think in rugby union we've got to try and re-engender, because it's being lost because everyone's bowing to the altar of money.
I think, because I know this, I've been on both sides of this.
Yeah.
And I'm aware that we're starting to run out of time
long
now.
It's the longest episode ever.
Isn't it? Brad's like rolling his eyes again.
This is proper rugby noise, he's going for it.
So I'll just make this point.
Yeah, go on then.
So I remember distinctly, and I won't name the clubs and I won't name the league, but this was a long time ago. I remember being very frustrated that I was getting a bit of noise from the crowd. And somebody shouts along the lines of, you're being paid to be here, why are you not better?
Yeah. My dad always says, I've got one eye and there's one more than most referees.
God. We won't go on to the subject of your father anyway. And I, at that time, was the only person on that pitch that was not being paid a fee to be there. Yep. Every single player was, and apart from me. Mm-hmm. Now, we've got a sort of strange system that how it works, but as referees, up until a certain level, all you get is expenses.
Yep.
Then it goes into, you get a little bit of a fee plus a capped expense. Yep. So if you do 400 miles, they'll only pay you 200 of those miles. Yep. The rest of it is you. So, and that then gets taken out of that fee. So ultimately, the money is now coming down in the world of refereeing. So I've been on both sides. I'm very lucky now that I am paid to do what this is, and it's my job. But I remember standing in the middle of the pitch and thinking to myself, what am I doing? What am I doing? Like, why am I here when I'm the only one that's not being paid to be here? And I found that really hard. And that was a lower level sort of community. So we're just breaking into...
But again, this is one of the challenges in lower level rugby.
Yeah.
Is if you start paying and you can only afford to pay 2 or 3 or whatever, you start to break it up.
Yeah.
Whereas if you say, right, we all get this benefit, we all get fed after training, we all get, you know, a couple of jugs of beer, and then as you start to get to that point where you, if 5,000 people are coming through and there's money being earned, then the players should
but
earn some of
that. Where do you cut this off? Because national leagues are important into...
Attendance, and clubs can only spend what they make. And I think this is... John Inverdale's been big on this.
Then I don't think you'd see Ealing in the Championship, would you?
No, you shouldn't. And you shouldn't see Ampthill. You know, if you've got to walk through a forest and go and stand on a bank, then they're investing too heavily in their playing stock and not in their infrastructure. This is a big thing the RFU are looking at.
Yeah.
Is you've got to have, and this is where you have minimum standards, because if you don't have the facility to make money, it's just on the whim of rich people that want to invest.
Yeah.
Or you've got a business that's making enough money to pay a load of players, but you have no facility. It's off. And this is what this is the real difficult thing that rugby union's trying to gauge at the moment.
Yeah.
And it's still in its, you know, it's in its adolescence now with 25 years of pro, and they're still figuring it out. And it's lovely when you've got top level business, Sandy Park, conference and banqueting, hotel, all booming, making money, and that's to fund the rugby team.
Yeah.
That's fine. but you've got to try and get these other clubs that are aspirational to go, well, it's not rock and roll. If you're an investor, you want to go and buy the cool fly off. I want to go and buy that lad that plays for them and give him 10 grand. Rather than actually what I should do is invest in trying to get nice changing facilities. So that the club is indemnified and the youth section are looked after.
I see this argument, and I really like this argument. I can't help but in some ways feel that this is very hypocritical of you, from the sense of back along you've done all the things you're fighting for now, you've taken payments as a professional sportsman.
That was the thing that I'm living,
and on the
point.
Way back down you didn't
South Morton. I've just coached them for love.
No, I'm not talking about that. But anyway, South Morton don't pay any of their players.
No, I know, but that's what I'm saying. I'm driving up and down, just doing my coaching. I got a tracksuit top.
You love stash, you do.
I do. I'd love stash.
No, I really like the sentiment. I really like the idea of upgrading the facility side of stuff. And the food after training, I think, is a massive one. That makes a big difference to people. I wonder where the cutoff point is. Where do you say that actually elite rugby is your premiership and your championship.
Where you're making money. So if people are paying to come and watch these players, and after you've paid to put the lights on and you've paid to your staff that are serving the people in the ground, if there's leftover revenue, then by all means, that can go to the players. Guys.
So if you say that and you use that as your rule of when you're making money, the premiership would not exist.
No, they'd pay the players less.
No, the premiership would not.
This is the point that I've been making since I'm blue in the face. The players are worth £1 million a man per season. But unfortunately, there aren't enough people watching it on TV. There aren't enough people going into the grounds. So stop paying them as much money.
Yeah, but you're saying that and Exeter were full on the weekend.
Pardon? Yes.
You're saying that, but Exeter
are actually going to turn a profit this year.
But then you're getting Bath that's full on the weekend.
Yeah, but Bath have a terrible facility, and Bruce Craig underwrites a debt of about 40 million quid.
But then, so you can't spend as what you're bringing in. You're always going to lose money.
There has to be an investment into the facility to get it to the standard. You know, Bath
you
have to
see
reinvest.
But their training facility is very
spot
good.
On. Great. Yeah. And there has to be at the top end, absolutely, you have to speculate to accumulate. You've got to grow it. I get that. But down the pyramid, I think we've got to be a bit more stringent on clubs and say, if you're not any facility to make money, then we can't really allow you to progress through our leagues.
I don't think you can have that as a hard and fast rule, if I'm being honest.
Well, and again, Coxie, at the beginning of this conversation, nuance.
Yeah, but I think you can keep flinging nuance around, but I just don't.
I'm just a man that's passionate about the game and sees at the moment it ain't working. Anyway, that is two locks and a cock.
We could go on about that from. Brad has held him sign.
Need to finish now. This is a cracking debate. If you want to be a part of it, brad@radiox.co.uk. Other than that, a big shout out to Tom Debenham. If you've listened this far, Xerxes, you're a golden god, and I can't wait to play volleyball against you.
Oh my
final
god.
Words from you, Coxie.
I have no idea what you've just said.
Code
That's
language.
Word salad.
It's word salad, yes. Two locks and a cox. No, Ian, longest episode ever. Thanks for listening, Dad.
Two locks and a cox.
From Debenham's Radio X. With Exeter Chiefs.
The final game of the season is almost here. Exeter Chiefs take on Harlequins on Saturday, May the 11th. Book your tickets today at tickethub.exeterchiefs.co.uk.